This is Audible.
A champion figure skater describes her feeling of utter absorption when a performance is going well.
It was just one of those programs that clicked. I mean, everything went right, everything felt good. It's just such a rush, like you could feel it go on and on, like you don't want it to stop because it's going so well.
And a famous composer describes this feeling when his work is going well.
You're in an ecstatic state to such a point that you feel as though you almost don't exist. I have experienced this time and time again. My hand seems devoid of myself, and I have nothing to do with what is happening. I just sit there watching it in a state of awe and wonderment, and the music just flows out by itself.
If you've ever been completely absorbed in an activity, so that your energies are focused and concentrated and time seems to fly by, then you probably have experienced the state of optimal experience known as flow. Nightingale Conant is proud to present best-selling author Mihai Csikszentmihalyi here to share with you his insights on flow, living at the peak of your abilities.
Most people, when they think about what will make them happy, think that having a lot of money and having a nice house, having two cars or whatever is what will finally make their life full and happy. And generally, the expectation that material well-being is the source of happiness is very widespread. But in every historical period, those who thought about the issue realized that material well-being by itself does not make anybody happy. Money or power or even health are not the sources of happiness. They are useful, they make you feel better at the moment, but somehow, as human beings, we have this built-in dissatisfaction with what we have and what we own. We always want more. We always try to get more money, more power, more comfort. And unless we learn how to moderate these insatiable demands that we have built into our nervous system by the genes, unless we learn how to enjoy the moment as it goes by, unless we enjoy the passage of time, the activities we do as they occur, instead of always wishing for more, we are going to be disillusioned and disappointed at the end of life. Therefore, the kind of happiness I'm talking about is the happiness that comes not from owning things, not from trying to achieve things in the future, but the happiness that comes from the everyday activities we do, the happiness that comes from relishing the moment, from enjoying our interaction with the environment, with people around us, with the kind of tasks that we are attempting to do. And that's a very different type of emphasis. It's the happiness from the ongoing use of our skills, the ongoing living, the happiness that comes from living rather than from desiring to get something in the future.
What is flow?
Flow is what describes this peculiar feeling of complete involvement with what you're doing that comes when you're paying attention to a goal, when you are reading the feedback that you get from the goal. For instance, a tennis player who is so attentive to every strike of the racket and who is paying attention to how the opponent returns the ball. This concentration on what goes on in the moment is the experience of flow that I have been studying for the past 30 years, more or less. There are two ways in which flow enriches a person's life. First of all, it makes everyday activities that otherwise would be a chore or a source of conflict or misery more enjoyable, so that even the things that we don't want to or don't like to do in everyday life can be improved and made more enjoyable. The second reason why flow is a source of enrichment in your life is that it helps you to organize, to synthesize, to harmonize the elements of your life, both your time alone and time with friends, time with family, time at work, so that all of it supports each other, so that you don't feel kind of torn and conflicting, but you feel that you are working on all cylinders. Everything is aimed at the same purpose and the same meaning. And that way, the entirety of a person's life can become a flow experience. For instance, one of the people that struck me most as having the ability to find flow in their lives was a 60-year-old worker in one of the factories in the south side of Chicago. He was building railroad cars in a huge hangar-like factory under the most unpleasant conditions. It was very cold in the winter, hot in the summer. But this man, who had only 4-year education, his name was Joe, was among the most happy people that I ever met. He was famous in his factory for being able to fix almost any piece of machinery that went wrong, whether it was a forklift or an electronic controller for the welding machines that they used there. And everybody said, if Joe retires, we might as well close the factory because he keeps everything going. Well, this man never wanted to become a foreman because he just enjoyed fixing the machines, and so he was at the lowest rung of his factory. But he was more important than almost anyone else among the 300-400 people who worked there. What was most interesting to me is that Joe had bought two more lots surrounding his house, and there he has built a rock garden where he has planted all kinds of strange plants that he has brought there from all around the country. And he was very proud of his garden, but to make sure that it would work, that the plants would prosper, he has built this underground watering system. And then he had the idea of making the sprays of water that came out of his watering system so that they would produce rainbows. So he machine-tooled some spray system that would make a fine mist so that he could sit in the back of his porch and watch rainbows when he turned on the water. And then he found out, since he spent most of his time in the garden in the evening after the sun went down, he developed a lighting system that would make rainbows even at night. So he could sit on his porch and push one button and the water would go off, another button, the lights would go on, and then he would have rainbows all around him. This man with a 4th grade education had developed a way of working and a way of living which were all of a piece and which made him and his wife serene and feeling that they had a life that was not only enjoyable but which contributed something to making the world somewhat better and somewhat more meaningful. My interest in how to improve the quality of life came, I think, from my own experience during World War II, when as a child I saw so many adults being completely destroyed by the tragic events of the war. And yet I saw that among all of those adults that were essentially destroyed by the war, there were always one or two who seemed to have been able to keep their sanity, keep their courage, who were able to help others, who were able to give a sense of purpose and meaning to those around them. And I just became curious, how do you get to be a person like that? I was scared, as I was 10 years old towards the end of the war, and we saw the whole culture crumbling around. So it became, in a way, an important issue for me to discover what you can do to stop this kind of madness that seized people during the war and how you can build lives that are more fulfilling and enjoyable. So at the end of the war, I tried various ways to answer that kind of question that I had, you know, how some people are able to keep their head up when most are kind of destroyed by external situations. And I tried that by becoming a writer. I wrote fiction. I tried to become a painter. I painted for a while. Also, I became interested in various religions, both Christianity and also some of the Eastern religions. And then around the age of 16, I came across the writings of the Swiss psychologist Gustav Jung, who seemed to be dealing with the same problems of how, among all this chaos of World War II, how one could recapture a sense of wholeness, a sense of purpose. So I started reading many psychologists. After Carl Gustav Jung, I read Freud and all the other psychologists I could lay my hands on. And I decided that that would be perhaps the way for me to understand what was going on in the world. But in Europe at that time, psychology was not a well-developed field, and I knew that in the United States, psychology was much better developed. So I decided to come here, and I arrived in the United States in 1956 with the intention of learning as much as I could about psychology. And I enrolled at that time at the University of Chicago, which was a good choice because that university is in some ways very traditional. It's very interested in developing basic research, and there you learn that there is nothing more practical than a good theory. And this is something that led me all through my years of trying to get a PhD, which I finally got, and my doctoral degree was on understanding artistic creativity, how artists learn to do the kind of work that will produce an original painting or sculpture. I have been a teacher now at the university for over 22 years, and I keep trying to answer the same question: what makes people's life happier and more meaningful?
How Flow came about.
Originally, I studied what made people's life most happy by interviewing individuals who were involved in activities that seemed to be self-rewarding, like artists, musicians, chess masters, rock climbers, and so forth. But after a while, I realized that interviews, although they gave a general information about how things were, they weren't precise enough. They weren't giving you the kind of moment-by-moment texture of daily life which I needed to access if I wanted to understand how everyday life could be made more enjoyable. So I and my students at the university developed this method that we ended up calling the ESM, short for Experience Sampling Method. And this method involves giving people electronic pagers and a booklet of answer sheets. And then we would send a radio signal about 10 times a day to these pagers. And when the pager went off, when it started beeping, the person takes out the booklet and writes down what he or she is doing, where they are, who they are with. And then they circle answers, for instance, how happy you are on a 7-point scale, or how much you're concentrating, or how well you feel about yourself, how good you feel about what you're doing, and so forth. So in a day, you get about 8 to 10 of these answers. After a week, you get almost like a film strip or snapshots of daily life for people, which are gathered at the moment, not afterwards, not when you think back on it, but as you do the things that you do in daily life, you know, get up in the morning, drive to work, etc. So you sample these experiences at the time they're happening, and this way you don't get as much distortion, you don't get the kind of forgetting, selective forgetting that you get when you interview people.
What produces flow?
Clarity of goals is one of the first things that people tell you in connection with what produces flow. I don't mean just long-term goals. For instance, suppose you are playing, let's say, a game of chess. Well, your ultimate goal is to win the game, perhaps. Otherwise, you wouldn't be playing in the first place. But more than that goal, the important thing is that you have little goals buried into the activity from moment to moment. You know exactly how each move would create an advantage on your side. So you know how you want to develop your pieces. You know how you want to control the board. This constant knowing of what you want to do is very important in all flow activities. Think about playing a piece of music, for instance. Your goal is not just to perform a song or a piece, but it is moment by moment you know what notes you want to hit and you know what chords you want to play. And so this clarity of what you want to accomplish is extremely important. Activities that make it so clear what you have to do, we could call flow activities. These are activities which are, in some sense, created so that they can produce flow. There would be no other reason to play tennis except that it's enjoyable, and therefore it's an activity that has very clear goals. In everyday life, it's not so clear. At work, at home, the goals are not very clear. So it's up to us to know how to build moment by moment goals in what we are doing. We should be able to build goals into our work day, into our relation with other people, or even the most mundane and routine activities like getting up in the morning and brushing your teeth. It sounds silly, but if you have a set of goals for how to brush your teeth or take a shower, whether you should shave first and then take the shower or vice versa, each of these little meaningless activities, if they are built around a set of goals that you decide on, that you think make it most purposeful and efficient, then doing even these things that usually are a drag, they're not enjoyable at all. You think it's wasted time. Most of people feel that the kind of things that you have to do in the interstices of your work life are just meaningless, you know. But if you build goals around them, they can become more enjoyable.
How flow helps you enjoy life.
If you keep busy just because you have nothing else to do and there is no feedback that you get from what you're doing because whatever you do is equally important, then you don't enjoy what you're doing. But if you set these goals and you try actually to do the best as you try to reach them and you figure out whether you are getting closer to what you wanted to accomplish or not, then even the activity itself becomes more rewarding. Because let's face it, I mean, in our life, we have three major things we have to do in our waking time. I mean, one third of everybody's life, more or less, has to go to some form of productive activity, work. Okay, that's fixed, more or less. There's another third, roughly, that is free time, leisure time, where we can do whatever we want. And then there is one third of our life which has to go to so-called maintenance activities. These are washing yourself, dressing, eating, resting, shopping, commuting. For most people, this one third of life is wasted because it's done kind of as simply a routine, as simply getting over with it. Well, there's no reason why it should be like that. It's possible that people who really learn to enjoy even these one third of life that otherwise would be wasted. And the way they do it is by making a game out of it, by trying to do the best, try to beat the time, for instance. I mean, to do it most efficiently, most effectively, dressing with the fewest times that you have to run back and forth from the closet to get your dress or your shoes or whatever. Try to do things with efficiency and elegance so that you are in control even of that time that would be wasted. When you can begin to do it, it's not very different from trying to write a poem or do a drawing, because it's under your control. You have goals for how well it should be done. And then it won't become as enjoyable as playing a symphony or sailing in the South Seas, but it will give you that little extra lift of knowing that you are not wasting that time completely, that you are in control of it and you are trying to do the best with it.
How flow can change your life.
So what I hope to achieve in the rest of these talks is to give you an idea of what we can expect to learn from this concept of flow. First of all, it will be a process that will make each day more rich, more intense, and meaningful by transforming everyday experiences into more flow-like experiences. In order to do that, we have to first learn and to master the 8 components of enjoyment that people all over the world report when their experiences are particularly enjoyable. Then we can start talking about how to develop an autotelic personality, a personality that knows how to transform experiences that to others will seem ordinary or even full of conflict into experiences that are rewarding, when the doing of any act will become its own reward. We will talk about how to harness the power of concentration, how to control the body and its senses so that things like walking down the street or eating a meal or cooking a meal are experienced as rewarding. How to enjoy art and music as well as athletics, all the various components of our physical activity, which can be so enjoyable and so often get wasted. Then we'll talk about how to transform work into flow experiences, how to make the different aspects of work, the kind of concentration that's required, the human elements of relationship with bosses and co-workers, how to try to improve these so that you feel in control of them and you feel that doing them is not just a waste of time, but it is a rewarding, enjoyable experience. Many of us feel that being alone is a tremendous waste of time. Most people feel depressed, lonely when they are alone. And yet, solitude can be the most rewarding time of our day, when we are really in control, when we can do the kind of things we really want to do. And yet, most of us feel so cut off from life when we are alone that we don't know how to use this time, which is so potentially enjoyable, the time alone. At the same time, many of our relationships with people are a source of conflict rather than a source of serenity and fulfillment. So we will talk about how to make human relationships more harmonious and satisfying. Enjoying the separate elements of life, work, play, relationships, and solitude will go a long way toward making life more full and happy. But most people need to find a unifying theme that relates the various facets of experience into a whole. Religions and value systems often perform this function. You may think of these systems of belief as the rules of an all-encompassing game, the game of life. I will deal with the question of how life themes are created and how they can bring flow into your entire existence. So, you will gain 4 major benefits through this program. The first is to understand how you can get control over your inner life. Your attention, your moods, your willpower. This control is what you need to reach the second goal, to experience flow in your everyday life activities, regardless of your external conditions. The third benefit is that you will learn to develop an increasingly complex self, a self that grows from day to day as a result of enjoyable interactions. Finally, the fourth and most ambitious result you will gain is that it will help you to put together your day-to-day experiences into a meaningful life, one that fills you with serenity and satisfaction. If you take even a small step in that direction, you will have taken a giant stride towards happiness. By the end of these tapes, we will have covered a very great deal of information, and you will have the tools to make all of life an enjoyable flow experience. But remember that the end is just the beginning. What will make the real difference is not what I say or what you hear, but what you do to implement these ideas. At this point, I feel privileged to invite you to an exciting voyage of discovery. The discovery of how to make the most of your life.
On this side, Professor Csikszentmihalyi begins by explaining to you the 8 major components you need to create a flow experience.
We are now ready to learn about the major components of flow. If you don't know what makes people happy, you must discover it slowly by trial and error. On the other hand, if you can find out what research has revealed about the conditions that produce flow, it will be much easier to build these conditions into your life, which will mean greater happiness for you. You have often seen the happiness on the face of children engrossed in play. You have seen the intensity on the faces of athletes trying to beat their own records. And there have been times when you too have been carried away by a feeling of exhilaration, of profound enjoyment. What makes such moments of bliss possible? Our studies suggest that people experience flow under very similar conditions the world over. While the specifics vary from person to person, the general principles are remarkably uniform for young and old, male and female, rich and poor. Therefore, if you learn how flow occurs and how it feels, you can enrich the quality of your life. The best way to understand flow is to look at it in terms of 8 major components. These components were mentioned by almost everybody that we interviewed who enjoyed what they were doing. We interviewed chess players, we interviewed artists, composers of music, rock climbers, athletes of different sort. And when they were describing how they felt when what they were doing was really going well, they tended to mention these 8 components. Not all of them perhaps, but most of them came out in all of these descriptions. Later we found that even people who were not doing this kind of elite sports, but for instance, when we started to interview people who enjoyed their job, like surgeons or computer experts, programmers, they also mentioned the same 8 components. Then people started interviewing individuals in other countries, other cultures, in Japan, Australia, Indonesia, they also came up with the same dimensions of the experience. So we are fairly confident now, after collecting over 8,000 interviews around the world, that these 8 components really are the essential elements of what makes an experience enjoyable. So let me describe the 8 major conditions that people report when they are deeply involved in an enjoyable flow experience. If you remember these 8 points and you apply them to what you do every day, your life will never be the same again.
Work will become more fun and more efficient. Free leisure time will be more enjoyable and meaningful.
The first thing that everybody mentions as a characteristic of the kind of enjoyable activity they are doing is that they know very clearly what they have to do. In other words, the goals of the activity are clear and not conflicting and not confusing. For instance, as I mentioned also before, if you play tennis, you know exactly how to do and what you want to do. The rules and the goals are very clear. If you play chess, you know exactly what the next move should be, or at least what type of move is important for you to win. If you play a musical instrument, you know exactly what notes you want to play. In other words, you have not only an overall goal, you not only know what you want the activity to result in, but you know every minute what you want to accomplish. For instance, if you are climbing a mountain, every step of the way, you watch where you want to put your foot, where you want to put your fingers to pull yourself up, and the whole activity is very clearly focused on this series of steps or goals. And this is in contrast to everyday life. You know, in everyday life, we may have an overall goal. We want to accomplish something, but often the steps are not clear. You have kind of confusing, contradictory ideas of how to get there. So this clarity of goals is a very important element of an activity that is enjoyable. The second dimension, the second element of enjoyable activities that people report is that they know every moment whether what they are doing is getting them closer to the goal or not. You can summarize that by seeing that feedback is immediate. You know moment by moment how well you're doing. For instance, again, if you think of playing tennis, after hitting the ball, you know whether it went where you wanted it to go. If you play a musical instrument and you are hitting a wrong note, you know that you have made a mistake. And that clarity of feedback is essential for keeping you focused on what you're doing, because you get this information about how you do and you can improve, you can change your course as you move along. For instance, it was very interesting when we first started talking to people who really enjoyed their work. Surgeons were the first group. It was amazing to hear how surgeons would describe the enjoyment of surgery in terms of knowing exactly what they were doing, of getting constant feedback on their activity. If they were cutting into a surgical operation, as they were cutting, they knew that they were doing well when there was no blood in the cavity, and every second, millisecond, actually, they were monitoring their progress, and they were knowing, okay, I'm doing well. And this keeps you focused on the activity. If you don't know how well you're doing, as we so often do in everyday life, then it's hard to keep concentrating. You say, oh, well, I don't know whether what I'm doing is really leading me anywhere, so I can relax, or I get bored, I get distracted. But if you know, as you move along, how well you're doing, then you can focus and you can get really involved in what you're doing. So those two clear goals and immediate feedback are, in many ways, necessary for this whole experience to get started. Another element of activities that are enjoyable, which is very important, is that the challenges of the activity are matched with the skills of the person. In other words, what there is to do is in balance with what you can do. Think about, again, when is a game, for instance, enjoyable? let's say playing chess, playing tennis, playing a game of cards, it's only enjoyable if your opponent is about at the same level of ability as you are. In other words, you feel that you are neither overwhelmed by the other person's ability or you are not bored because you are so much better than the other person. That kind of balance, that kind of match between challenges and skills is typical of any activity that ends up being enjoyable. A job that's too demanding makes you feel stressed. A job that is below your skills makes you feel bored, and you begin to get distracted again. But when a job is just on the right level, or any activity that's on the right level of skills, even if at first you didn't want to do it or didn't like to do it, it eventually becomes interesting and eventually it becomes enjoyable. So a lot of people start out disliking doing something like playing the piano or working on a computer. The computer seems intimidating, new, overwhelming. But once you develop the skills to learn how to interact with it, then it can become enjoyable. And in fact, after a while, it can become even addictive. You don't want to stop because it's so enjoyable to do it. So this third characteristic of flow activities is that you feel that you can operate with the challenges at the right level of skills, and you get slowly almost sucked into this activity, whether you like it or not. When an activity has clear goals, immediate feedback, matching challenges and skills, then the fourth characteristic of enjoyable activities begins to be noticed. And this is a feeling of focus, of concentration on what you're doing. People in flow always mention that somehow this duality of attention that we have in everyday life disappears. Usually we are always kind of split in our attention. We are thinking of what you're doing and we are doing it. We are watching, monitoring what's happening around us, and we are doing something else. We have this split attention. But in flow, this split attention focuses, emerges into a single kind of beam of concentrated, focused attention. And this is why when you are in flow, you can achieve so much more, because you are not splitting your attention, which we need for achieving anything. We always need attention to accomplish anything. But when it's split, it's less efficient. When it's focused, it's much more effective. You can accomplish more, and you feel good about the ability to be completely, singly focused. It's a feeling of inner harmony, of great ease, great spontaneous energy that you feel when you achieve that kind of concentration. The fifth component of the flow experience follows from this fourth, from this concentration, from this focus. The fifth element that people mention is that as you are so effortlessly and spontaneously and efficiently focused, you cannot be aware of the kind of problems that we always are aware in everyday life. That is, everyday frustrations are removed from attention. You cannot attend to them. If you are playing a musical instrument, you cannot worry about your family life, about your income tax, about your boss, about any of the things that in everyday life often inadvertently intrude on our attention. If you were to worry about those things as you are playing a musical instrument, you would hit a wrong note. Similarly, if you are a climber up there 3,000 feet above the valley floor and you're hanging by your fingertips and you start worrying about the kind of things that in everyday life worry us, you would fall, probably. So you can't afford, you can't let your mind wander to this kind of everyday frustrations of life. And that is a great feeling of relief. It's great to be operating in the present without worrying about the past, without worrying about the future, but being completely concentrated in what you're doing. In this sense, you may say that flow is a form of escape. You're escaping from reality. But it's good to remember that, for instance, Albert Einstein, the great physicist, used to say that art and science are the most effective forms of escape that people have developed. And it's true that art is a form of escape because instead of dealing with reality as it is, it creates a new reality, a reality that's more interesting, more beautiful, more exciting than the reality we are used to. Similarly, science, in a sense, denies the reality we know by bringing in new knowledge, new technology, new ways of operating, and in effect creating again a new reality. So there are different forms of escape. There are escape forward and escape backward. The escape backward is when you dull your sense of reality by using chemicals, drugs, alcohol, or by denying reality or by repressing reality. That's escape backwards. But in flow, you are escaping forward. You are creating new reality by taking on challenges that were not there before and by learning skills that you didn't have before. So that escape from the everyday frustrations of life that you get when you're so concentrated is relief from the past, a relief from the constraints of a reality which is frustrating and confusing, and it moves you into a whole new experience where you are completely involved and focused. The sixth condition that follows is that you feel that you can be in control of your life. Control of your actions, control of your experience. You are not, of course, in complete control because that would mean that your skills are higher than the challenges. You are on an edge where control is possible. You can fall off that edge if you relax too much, if you don't use your skills to their complete possibility. But while you are on that edge, you know that at least in principle you can be in control. So that even rock climbers who are hanging there by their fingertips feel that on that mountainside they are more in control than if they were to cross a busy intersection in New York or Chicago where they wouldn't know whether a taxi cab or a delivery boy would run into them. They're crossing a street, they are not in complete control, whereas hanging from their fingers on the mountain, they know that if they prepare themselves, they develop their skills, they can match anything that the rock presents to them in terms of difficulty with their skills. The sense of control, again, is a great feeling. It's a feeling that you rarely have in everyday life where your boss or your family may react to you in ways that you can't predict and you can't control. So, finally, there is a seventh condition that people mention universally, and that is that when they are in this challenging situation where they have to concentrate and use all their skills, they also lose a sense of self-consciousness. In other words, the kind of ego defenses that we have in everyday life. One thing we find in our research is that in everyday life, some of the worst feelings people have is when they are worried about how others think of them. For instance, if your hair is not in place, if you have a pimple on your face, if your tie is not right, you are wondering what others will think of you and you feel kind of defensive. If you have a project at work that you are worried about what your boss will think about, you feel self-conscious. And this feeling of monitoring yourself and how others think of you, this kind of defensiveness, this worry about your presentation of how you look, this is one of the worst
feelings that we carry with us day in, day out. But when you are in flow, you don't have the luxury of worrying about yourself. You are so involved, you are so committed, you are so concentrated that you are no longer aware that yourself as a vulnerable, defenseless entity exists. You are so involved in what you're doing that you don't care anymore about what others think about you. In fact, very often in the depth of this flow experience, you feel a sense of transcendence, of going beyond the limits of the ego, going beyond the limits of the self. If you have ever sung, for instance, in a choir, you know the sense of being wrapped up in the music, of almost becoming part of the harmony, the melody that is soaring around you. If you have played in a team sport, you know that when the team is really performing well, it's this exhilarating sense that you are no longer isolated, but you are part of this energy that's flowing around you. Surgeons describe operating as being enjoyable in part because they are part of a choreography of movement. The anesthesiologists, the nurses, the other surgeons are all contributing to this common effort, and you feel exhilarated at not being alone, a separate individual, but being part of this team that's working together so beautifully and in harmony. So that sense of transcendence can come as a result of the flow experience. And the interesting thing is that even though you forget yourself during the activity, typically after the activity, we find that when flow is over and you think back of how it felt, how positive you felt, how skillful you had been, how you did something new that you didn't think you had accomplished before, as a result of reflecting on your flow experience, people's self-esteem increases. It becomes stronger. You feel good about yourself. You feel good about what you have accomplished. So you forget yourself at the moment, but after the activity, yourself returns stronger than it had been before. And it's one of the paradoxes of flow, that you let yourself go, and yet as a result of it, it returns stronger. The eighth characteristic of flow that people generally mention is that the sense of time seems to be transformed. Usually we chop up time into, 60 minutes an hour, 60 seconds a minute, and so forth, as if every little piece was equivalent and the same. But in flow, what happens is that sometimes hours get condensed into what seem to be minutes, so that you start the job and then you say, oh, maybe it's time to have lunch, but actually it's time for dinner because it's not been just 2 hours, but 8 hours have passed. Other times it feels like what in reality were a few seconds or less than a second gets stretched out into what seemed to be 15, 20 minutes, like a dancer doing a pirouette on her toes will say it seemed to have lasted, 10 minutes, whereas it was less than a second, because so much is packed into that moment that you experience every little movement of your body and every sight, every sound of the music gets stretched out. So what happens to time is that time adapts itself to your experience, rather than the other way around, rather than trying to put your life into these boxes of 60 minutes an hour, time adapts itself to how you actually feel when you're doing these things. And this is very common and very universally reported by anybody who has a flow experience, that time gets changed, the sense of time is changed. These are the eight main components people mention when what they do is fun and enjoyable. They have a clear sense of goals, they know how they are doing, their skills are matched to their challenges, their attention is concentrated on what they are doing,
They operate in the moment. They are not worried about being out of control or about how they look in the eyes of other people. Time then passes fast, and one is glad to be doing whatever it is that provides such an experience. In the rest of these tapes, we shall see in greater detail how you can apply these conditions to every aspect of your life. One example of flow that shows how this type of enjoyment works in everyday life is one that I remember from my teenage years when I was in Italy. And I used to hang out in the antique store run by a friend, Signor Orsini, who really loved his job. He used to try to sell old pieces that he collected from people around in the neighborhoods in Naples, often to tourists, but also to other Italians. And one day, an American lady walked in and looked around the store and was attracted to an 18th century little angel carved in wood and kind of gilded putto, they are called, these little angels. And she wanted to buy it and asked for the price. And Signor Orsini told her a price that he kind of picked out of the blue, and it was a rather high price. But the American lady said, oh, fine, and she pulled out her American Express checks to buy it. And the owner, Signor Orsini, got really furious, he got red in the face and said, no, lady, I'm sorry, I can't sell this to you, please leave. And the lady was really surprised and said, but no, what's wrong with it? And he said, well, if I were to be paid every price that I ask on the spur of the moment, this would not be fun anymore. My job would not be enjoyable anymore. I'd rather not sell it than not have fun out of the transaction. I was kind of nonplussed by it, and I, after the lady left, I asked him, well, but wouldn't you rather make all this money that you asked for? And he said, no, I'm not in this just for the money. I want to also enjoy the haggling, the trying to outsmart the customer. And being paid what I asked for would make this a very dull job indeed. And that kind of opened my eyes at the time about how, as a shopkeeper, he thought that the greatest enjoyment was to match his wits against those of a customer who was also trying to use their wits to outsmart him. And so it was out of this kind of almost like a lawyer and a prosecution and defense trying to get the best of a situation. He thought that his job was to get the best out of opposition against a worthy opponent and not just anybody who was going to fall in with what he asked for. So flow is what we experience when we are enjoying something. That is, when we are confronting some new challenge and we develop new skills to confront it.
Listen as a rock climber recalls an experience he once had.
When you first start climbing, you're very aware of capability. But after a while, you just do it without reflecting on it at the time. When you're climbing, you have to devote yourself totally to the climb. You fuse your thinking with the rock. It's the Zen feeling, like meditating or concentrating. One thing you're after is the one-pointedness of mind. You can get your ego mixed up with climbing in all sorts of ways, and it isn't necessarily enlightening. But when things become automatic, it's like an egoless thing in a way. Somehow, the right thing is done without you ever thinking about it or doing anything at all. It just happens.
What is the difference between pleasure and enjoyment? Professor Csikszentmihalyi tells us why only one of them leads to personal growth.
By now, you may have noticed that the enjoyable state of flow is quite different from what people think of as pleasure. In fact, this is true. Pleasure is a good feeling programmed in our genes to make us do things that at one time in the past, before we were born, was good for the evolution of the human species. So we feel pleasure when we eat, because this way our body is sure to get enough nutrition. We feel good about having sex, because this way our body is sure to reproduce itself. Pleasure is automatic. Anyone can experience it, and it needs no skills. The downside of pleasure is that while it is necessary for survival, it does not help us grow. We can eat all we want, have as much sex as we can get, yet we will remain exactly what we were.